Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. We'll continue in just one moment with our anecdotal census, but I just wanted to make sure that everyone heard that General Petraeus has returned to the Senate briefing room, and he told the senators he was feeling a little bit lightheaded there. It wasn't Senator McCain's question. We'll have more on that at the newscast at the top of the hour. We now continue with our anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York area from 2000 to 2010. We're going county by county around the area, and today it's time for Queens County, which is, you guessed it, the county that defines the borough of Queens. From Richmond Hill to Jackson Heights, Bayside to Woodside, lots to discuss throughout the hour about what's changed in Queens, so you can start calling right now to tell us about the biggest change you've noticed in Queens over the past 10 or so years. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Don't forget to go to the Brian Lehrer page at WNYC.org and comment on the internet if you prefer. We're going to take a call right now. Curtis from East Elmhurst. Hi, you're on WNYC. Curtis, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm here. I guess the change that I would note in my neighborhood is just how much diversity we now have.
So Curtis, give us a little background. Where is East Elmhurst? What does it look like? And how long have you lived there?
Well, my family has had a house in the neighborhood since 1940. And I've lived here since the late 1980s.
And we're talking maybe single-family homes?
Single-family house. Most of the houses in East Elmhurst. East Elmhurst is next to Jackson Heights and Corona. And it's almost exclusively single-family and two-family houses. Almost no apartment buildings. We have a few, but not many.
So who's moving in or who's moving out of your neighborhood?
Starting in the 80s, we had an in-migration of Latino population, but...
Are we talking about a Latino population from any particular part of the world?
Well, originally it was Dominican that came in, Dominican folks who came in, but in recent years we've also seen Mexican-Americans or Mexican nationals come in and El Salvadorians, a whole range of folks. But it's not just Latinos that I see in my particular block. I also have seen Vietnamese folks come in and even some white folks.
And how does this affect the feel of the overall neighborhood? I mean, you said it's much more diverse, but is there a different kind of street life, different restaurants? What's happening?
We don't have a major restaurant life in the neighborhood itself. Astoria Boulevard is our major avenue, and the way that Astoria Boulevard is designed, there really isn't a huge number of restaurants on Astoria Boulevard. Northern Boulevard is where most of the restaurant life is, and that's has a very, very lively both Indian and Latino restaurant life.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Curtis. A little context about Queens. Of the five boroughs, Queens is the largest in area and the second largest population to Brooklyn. And you might have heard that Brooklyn would be the third biggest city in the United States if it was its own city behind Los Angeles and Chicago. Well, Queens would be fourth. Its population of 2.3 million is the highest it has ever been. Here's possibly the headline stat for Queens. In 2005 to 2007, American Community Survey, 48.3% of the population of Queens was foreign born. It's expected that the results of this year's census will show that Queens is now majority foreign-born, more than 50%. We'll spend a fair amount of time discussing the implications of that demographic trend throughout the hour with a number of guests who work with immigrant communities in Queens. But right now, we're joined by Andrew Beveridge, professor of sociology at Queens College and the CUNY Graduate Center. He's also the man behind Social Explorer, a website that lets you look at demographic trends and maps in your area. And that's a resource we've used throughout our census series. Andrew, welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, I'm delighted to be back.
From a demographic perspective, where do you start when you talk about Queens?
Well, I think the thing that, and actually it was pretty well demonstrated by the first caller, is that the northwest part of Queens, which is, Jackson Heights, Astoria, really all the way, even if you could say it through Flushing, where the number 7 train ends, that area is so amazingly diverse, and it has been that way really since, I think, about 1990. But and the question is, to what extent has it shifted? I do think there has been an increase in Latino population, some increase in various Latino groups, and also some increase in various Asian groups. But I mean, all throughout the borough, because I actually teach a course where students study their own neighborhood and they look at it over time. All throughout the borough, Queens is becoming more and more and more diverse. But I think one of the most stunning things about Queens is that Northwest Queens, it's diverse on the street, in the neighborhood, on the block. So you will find Asians and new Irish immigrants. You'll find various Asian groups, Bangladeshi, Indian, and Pakistani. You'll find Malaysian, Vietnamese, Chinese, and actually in the Chinese you'll have different sources of Chinese. And then you'll also find other recent immigrants. So it's just, it's an amazing thing. It's polyglot. It's very, very diverse. And that's fairly unusual. I mean, when people usually talk about immigrants in the United States, or if you look outside of New York, immigrants really is mostly Mexicans, but not in New York. In New York, you have many, many, many different groups. And in Queens, you have, I would say, particularly in Northwest Queens, you have many, many different groups, and they live relatively close to one another, which is sort of unusual.
Well, what accounts for that? I mean, I notice you say, sort of diversity on the block. And I think that if most people think about, their lives in New York City and the blocks where they live, there does tend to be, even in a diverse neighborhood, there tends to be sort of block by block homogeneity. What accounts for the fact that in Northwest Queens, it's not like that?
I really don't know. I know that we've looked at it, over and over. I mean, you take Astoria, for example, which, sort of traditionally is thought of as Greek. I mean, there's parts of Astoria where you have Russians, Pakistanis, and various groups moving in. I think one of the things is that it's the Northwest Queens has the number 7 train has tremendous proximity to Manhattan. So if you live along the number 7, you can get into Manhattan relatively rapidly, and if you're working there. And, the number 7 train, interestingly enough, during the Clinton administration was deemed a national trail. I mean, the number 7 train is, of course, the famous train that Rocker, the ball player, made so much fun of. But it is an amazing thing that, there is some distinction as you come up in various stations. Nonetheless, you could go, there are blocks where you'll have an Ecuadorian bar and an Irish bar and a Mexican bar or restaurant all in a row.
Do we know why people are ending up in Queens? Is it because the airports are there? Is it because the number 7 line? I mean, is it because people have already moved there? What is attracting so many immigrants to Queens County as opposed to the other ones?
Well, I actually think it's always been an immigrant, it's always been a borough for immigrant families. It's just now the immigrant families, are different origins than they were before. But you have to remember, Archie Bunker, Queens, and he was, from Irish American stock. And so that's what you've always had in Queens. You've had, families when the Queens filled up after the subways got there, and by 1940 or the 1930s, the subways were built there. When Queens filled up in terms of building housing, you know, people who moved there were families. We've, in fact, tracked, like there was one, I remember that we did an analysis for the New York Times, and there was one house where we watched, you know, where that we got data on who had lived there and lived in the neighborhood, you know, since basically the house had been built in the 20s. And, you know, and there was a turnover in that house, but they all had kind of the same, you know, general biography or narrative. They had come from elsewhere. They had, you know, wanted to find a place to settle and have family, and they moved to Queens.
Let's talk a little bit about income. One of the most interesting statistics about the Queens is that the median household income is about $37,500. Now, just to take a pause and remind people what median means, that means the income that is in the middle. Half the people in Queens are earning less than that, and half are earning more. So it's not something that can be skewed by a few wealthy people. The level for the city for the whole is $38,000, which might not be what you would expect for such a heavily immigrant community. Why don't you just play a clip of Dante Cheney from the Patchwork Nation? Here's his take on Queens.
And, you know, in some ways you would look at numbers like that and you would say, well, obviously this must be a place where the incomes are lower than you'd expect. Not really. Actually, the incomes are a little higher in Queens. You could say that, you know, if the U.S. is changing and becoming more of an immigrant-focused nation as immigration rises and the Hispanic population rises, you know, Queens County would not be a bad way for things to go.
Do you agree? Is Queens a model for how immigrant America can also be a relatively affluent America?
Yes, I do. And I think one of the reasons for that is that there's so many different groups that are coming in. And they come in, some of the groups come in with very heavy levels of skills. For example, if you go out to Belrose area, I mean, there's a tremendous number of Pakistanis have moved to Belrose. Belrose is also an area where some Filipinos have moved. Lots of them work in the healthcare industry. You know, they work as nurses or nurses' aides or in other technical fields. And in fact, I found out from one of my students who was Pakistani that they actually advertised Belrose in Pakistan.
Let's take another caller, too. Cheshire from Flushing. Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi, I'm calling about Floral Park, which is right by Belrose, where I grew up. It goes right to the city line, and part of it's in Nassau. I'm growing up in the 50s. It was all the children and grandchildren of immigrants. Half the kids I knew had a babji or a nona or a bubby who didn't speak English. You were either Jewish or Catholic. You were always white. They were little two-bedroom expandable capes. If you wanted to expand it, you threw up a dormer. Now, all those houses, not all of them, but when people want to expand a house, it's huge. It's two stories. It's out over the garage. There are pools in the backyard. There are a lot of South Asians. It's not nearly as lit up around Christmas as it used to be. It smells divine out there. But the shifts are amazing to see.
Thanks for your call, Cheshire. Andrew Beveridge, did you want to respond to that at all?
No, I mean, that's actually a very good example of what's going on. And by the way, I did want to mention they have the name for it. It's called McMansioning. And my students have reported this in a number. I mean, I have about 20-something students a year, and each reports on their own neighborhood. And all throughout Queens, but particularly in Howard Beach, in some of the other neighborhoods, Whitestone, there have been a lot of McMansioning, where someone will Jamaica Estates, where people will take a house, either completely surround it or knock it down and build a new house basically almost out to the property line. And it's a very strange phenomenon, because sometimes they'll spend as much as $1.5 million building a new house on what's actually a fairly small lot. I think part of this has to do with, you know, the real estate market up until the crash and to some extent still was bubbling along in Queens, and people were deciding to build up. I mean, one of the things that happened, one of the sort of like this thing that's really noteworthy about this, there's two Home Depots in Queens that are actually really close to one another, and apparently Home Depot generally doesn't like to build another Home Depot, you know, near one of its own, you know, its first Home Depots, but they're both in Queens. One is off of College Point Boulevard. And the reason that they did it was the first one was by far the busiest Home Depot in the United States. And they just had so much business, they built another one fairly near. And that's because there's so much renovation going on. I mean, I remember you used to drive around Astoria, and someone mentioned that already. And you drive down the road, and every single, or I guess it's on your website, every single, there's so much renovation going on. They're knocking down houses, building, you know, small apartments, building larger apartments, doing all sorts of renovation. You see dumpsters on the streets. This is still true, by the way, even in the down.
All right, we're going to talk with the borough president of Queens, Helen Marshall, about the renovation in Queens that's been going on. I'm speaking with Andrew Beveridge, a demographer and professor of sociology at Queens College and the CUNY Graduate Center. We are doing, on the Brian Lehrer Show, the anecdotal census of the borough of Queens. I'm Andrea Bernstein, sitting in for Brian, who is on jury duty. And I want to bring two more people into this conversation. Andrew, stick around. I'd like to bring in Seema Agnani, who is the executive director of the Chaya Community Development Corporation, an organization based in Jackson Heights, Queens, that works with South Asian communities. Welcome, Seema, back to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to bring in right now Greg from Astoria. Greg, you're on the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was born in the Bronx, and my parents moved to Astoria when I was a kid in the mid-60s. And the thing I mentioned to your screener is that I used to go to the local bodega, and the man behind the counter was German, but he spoke English to his customers.
And
all the customers spoke
was it
English.
In fact a bodega?
Yeah, we didn't call it a bodega then. But all the customers spoke English to him, but amongst themselves you'd hear Greek and Italian and Serbo-Croatian, maybe a little bit of German, etc. Now I go to the corner bodega, which is called a bodega, even though there are not a lot of Spanish-speaking people within two blocks of where I live. But it's run by Yemenis, and you hear a lot of Arabic and Hindi and Urdu and Punjabi. And being of a European background myself, I used to be able to recognize the languages, even if I couldn't speak them. Now I can't even tell them apart.
Seema Agnani, can you respond to Greg and sort of tell us perhaps what communities we are talking about from South Asia?
Sure. I mean, actually, I'm glad Astoria has come up a few times because that is actually a long-time Bangladeshi community since the 80s. But, you know, people from South Asia, at least we include those from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, as well as Sri Lanka, and the borders and regions around them. You know, there's a lot of vague areas as well, like Afghanistan also is included in South Asia.
Andrew Beveridge was just telling us that a lot of communities are attracted to Queens because it's a family neighborhood, and it has that reputation or a series of family neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
But what in your experience is attracting people to Queens and not, say, the Bronx or Brooklyn or Staten Island?
Well, I mean, I think there is an established community in Queens, and you know, new immigrants, when they come to the city, of course, there are networks and safety nets when you move closer to the community itself. There are things in place like faith-based institutions, you know, families who you may know. And so a lot of it is just living closer to one's own community. I think, you know, we did a survey back in 2000, of the South Asian community and looking at sort of settlement patterns and housing issues. And 37% of the people we talked to said they chose their neighborhood because it was closer to the community. The second reason was the low rents. I think, you know, housing has come up a couple times. Even though Queens is, you know, the housing stock is very diverse, actually. There are a lot of one- to two-family homes, but there's also rental housing. And then there's a lot of informal housing that I spoke about the last time I was on the show, where, you know, it's really the only place people can afford to live are in informal housing units that are often in basement apartments or first floor apartments.
Are we seeing people coming? I mean, is there an internal change in the South Asian populations in Queens, or has it been relatively stable? By which I mean, are people coming from different places and supplanting the communities that are there, or is there a relatively steady stream from particular areas of South Asia?
Yeah, well, it's definitely changed. I think in the last census, Jackson Heights is a good example. Originally was established by Indian and Pakistani immigrants. Eventually, more Bangladeshi business owners started to take over the businesses here. And the newest group are those from Nepal, Tibetan immigrants coming via Nepal as well as Nepali immigrants. So if you come to Jackson Heights in the evening, the way it looks and the diversity has changed entirely over even the last 5 years.
Yeah, there was a very, very large increase of South Asians, which I think to some extent slowed down a bit after 9/11.
Mm-hmm. So, but Andrew Beveridge, I mean, I'm wondering, are people staying? And I mean, you know, the picture that we have of this incredible change, you know, one community supplanting another, but sort of what's going to happen in 10 years? Are these communities going to move to the suburbs? Are they going to stay in Queens? What can we tell about the makeup of sort of where these communities are going?
Well, I think one of the interesting things that happened, you know, between, like, there was, people sort of forget this, but there was actually a real estate crash in the late 80s, and it turned out that Queens actually recovered more quickly than Nassau County. And, I mean, you know, the usual pattern has been, you know, moving from Brooklyn or Queens to Nassau and Suffolk, you know, moving from the Bronx to Westchester, that sort of thing. I actually am not certain that's really a likely prospect because, you know, with other people, there's a lot of dual-earner families. A lot of people will move based upon where both partners have a job. Queens is very, very convenient for jobs. And, in fact, the borough of Queens' economy, you know, I don't know how it's doing in the current downturn, but before the downturn was really doing quite well and had, you know, grown quite a lot. So I think, you know, I think that it's not necessarily the case because suburbs are not quite as exciting a place to be anymore as they used to be. I mean, people are not really that enthusiastic, I think, about moving out to suburbs. So it could very well be that we're going to see, in effect, a deepening of some of these communities in Queens and more affluence, you know, within them. In other words, I think that's some of the things that are going on with the McMansioning, with the new condos. I mean, one of the things that people haven't mentioned about Astoria's got a tremendous number of condos, some of which, by the way, are not being rented because they're very expensive, you know, overlooking Manhattan. So I think that there's a very large chance that Queens will actually probably go more upscale than it has in the past. I mean, that's certainly true in Bayside,
so for Seema Agnani, what happens to these waves of immigrants if everybody, I mean, you mentioned, you know, all these new waves and the Tibetans from Nepal and all these new communities, and if people decide they want to stay and make their lives in Queens, what are you hearing from the community about sort of what happens to people that want to start coming now?
I mean, you know, housing is a primary concern. You know, I think that with the increased affluence, perhaps will happen, but, you know, it's not going to trickle to everybody, you know, and so that's a real concern for us. There is, you know, a lot of growth of the Bangladeshi community and the Nepali community in the Bronx as well as Brooklyn. So I do think people are also moving to the other boroughs as well as, you know, even upstate and Westchester. So some of that movement is happening. I think that's the challenge we face. You know, there isn't enough affordable housing in the borough, and that's really what we're really pushing for. You know, and hopefully the borough president can speak to that as well. But I think, in my opinion, that's one of the greatest needs that Queens has right now.
Let's bring in Ralph from Ridgewood. Hi, Ralph. You're on WNYC.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for accepting my call. Well, I don't know what to say. Quite frankly, I'm going to have to repeat everything that you people have mentioned.
Well, let me ask you something, Ralph. How long have you lived in Queens?
We moved in. We were refugees from the Bushwick section of Brooklyn, and we moved into Ridgewood, Queens. Bushwick's about three blocks down, and we were searching for an area where we could live peacefully because we weren't able to do so at that time. I understand, and I'm grateful to hear that Bushwick is getting better. And at one point, the disease was starting to spread, going over the borderline and coming into Ridgewood. But as of about 15 years ago, Orientals and other people have started to move in, and it's starting to get better again. Now it's overwhelmingly Latin American, and we have Yemeni Chinese coming in as well. Yemenis 99 cent stores, Mexican restaurants, mobile food units from Latin America. We have people that are entrepreneurial. We have people that are in the construction field, various trades, very, very, very talented, excellent, superb work. They're starting their own companies after 5 years, buying buildings. We have banks that we have never had along Myrtle Avenue coming being built by various corporations. We have even high-rises coming up over here nearby. I can't believe it. Water change over a 30-year period. I'm very, very pleased. We have the St. Bridget's Church. Forget about it. You can't get there. You can't get in on Sundays. It is the aisles
Ralph.
Are packed.
Ralph, I'm going to invite you to continue waxing positive about Queens on our webpage, the Brian Lehrer page at WNYC.org, because we do need to take a break. But thank you for your call, Ralph. And one of the things that I think is very interesting about all of the callers that have called in is that everybody is delighted with this influx of immigrants, which I think says something very interesting about Queens, and we'll get back to what that says about Queens right after the break. I want to thank Seema Agnani, the executive director of the Chaya Community Development Corporation, for joining us. Andrew Beveridge is a professor of sociology at Queens College and CUNY Graduate Center. Stay with us, Andrew. We'll be back with more of your anecdotal census, more of your calls after this break. Welcome back. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. All this hour, we are talking about the borough of Queens for the Brian Lehrer Show's Anecdotal Census. And we are joined now by Helen Marshall, the borough president of Queens. Thank you so much for joining us. And remaining with us is Andrew Beveridge, professor of sociology at Queens College and CUNY Graduate Center. Welcome to you both.
Thanks a lot. Andrew, I want to actually congratulate Helen Marshall on her recent appointment of Jack Eichenbaum as the Queens historian. I think that's just a wonderful thing. And if people want to find out about Queens, he has walking tours.
Yes, I know.
All right. I want to bring both of you into the conversation. But first of all, I want to go to Doris from College Point, Queens. Doris, you had a comment that I would like to get both of our guests to respond to. Doris?
Yes, I would appreciate it. Good morning.
Hi, Doris.
Hi. I'm glad to be able to have a little voice. I live in College Point, and people used to say, College Point, where is that? Well, they know where it is, and we have been overbuilt big time.
Doris, you need to turn off your radio if you haven't already.
I'm sorry. It's in the next room. I didn't think you could hear it. Let me run over there right now.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
So you were saying that in College Point, where you've lived for how long?
50 years.
50 yeah. years. Okay.
My first child was born here. So I'm a senior, semi-retired. But right across the street from me, there was a one-family house and a two-family house. They were sold, knocked down, and now we have nine families there.
I'm listening to
that's overbuilding as far as I'm concerned, you know. And it's like that all over Queens.
All right, let's get a response from the borough president, Helen Marshall, about whether Queens is being overbuilt.
Queens is the most multi-ethnic county in the entire city, in the entire country of the USA, okay? Now, yes, we are building. In fact, when I first came into office, we had a shortage of school seats, and I have a war room on school construction, and we have taken care of that. Now we have adequate schooling for our children. Yes, people have come in between the baby boomers and our large immigrant community. Yes, there are places and times when we're really overcrowded, but we're working on that very diligently.
I think that the argument that Doris and some other callers are making is that it's too much. There's too much building.
Well,
yeah, I think it's a question of restriction on building, and I think you know that's really I don't know if that's really in the borough's purview. That's the zoning. You know, they did a lot of rezoning, actually. Mm-hmm. Bloomberg did, and a lot of it did lead to more density, and I'm not certain which parts of Queens is affected, But, I mean, there is an issue, and there's also an issue with parking. I mean, I know my students
big time.
complain yes. about parking both ends at Queens College and where they live oftentimes.
All right, Borough President, let's talk about this, because from your perspective, and let's just sort of step back a second, how has the borough changed since you became borough president in, I guess, the beginning of 2002?
All right. Well, first of all, I want to tell you that because I was an elected official in the state assembly for 9 years and 10 in the city council, and I've lived in Queens since 1957, and I also went to Queens College. When I first came into office, we had a gentleman who was beaten badly. He was a Sikh. I went to visit him in his house. The reason he was beaten up because people thought he was Osama bin Laden, which has nothing to do with the Sikh community. But when I came here, because immigration, where I live in Corona, Jackson Heights, and East Elmhurst, that was the epicenter for immigration. So I had early on had a feeling of people coming in who didn't always speak the language, and also people who were looking for a place to live, etc. Well, I decided, what would I do here differently than I did in my district, on maybe a smaller basis? I immediately ordered what I call the Queens General Assembly, which brings us people from all over the borough of all different nationalities from each community board, and they sit down and have dialogue with one another. Now, today, the Sikhs have a major, every year, they have a major celebration in their area, in the community where they're mostly housed, and people accept it. Everybody wants to go there. They bring people. I mean, they don't celebrate it by themselves. They celebrate it with others. We have a Holocaust Center. A Holocaust Center is much more than just a museum. It's a place where people can come. And whenever we have a hate crime or anything like that, we have sessions there. We usually have about 10 or 15 rows of high school students, because hate crimes need to be dealt with. And here you have, maybe 50 to 60 teenagers listening to a man who escaped the Holocaust, and he's in his 90s. And he's telling this dynamic story to them. They didn't even know this story before. I would say, in general, that when I go to schools, when I go to meetings of civic groups or anything, it's a mixed group. And you can be in Jamaica Estates, you can be in any place in our borough, and you will find it'll be a mixed group. And I find that people living next door to one another, and many of the people who buy the new homes are people who are immigrants. And they get to know one another, and, you know, it's your neighbor next door. Our kids play together. You know, children are wonderful. I'm a teacher, and I know that they're wonderful, and they don't have these kind of feelings. We have our Memorial Day parades, and Francis Lewis High School has the most fabulous marching band, and one of the leaders on the side who's making everybody keep step, she has her hijab on, and she has her hat, her official hat from the school, on top of that. And she's making everybody keep step, and she's keeping in step, too.
Do you think, I mean, going back to the question that Doris was asking, I mean, obviously there's been a huge influx of people, you know, we're sort of talking about this hour, that now Queens is now majority foreign-born. I don't know how many counties in the United States,
yes,
especially one of, you know, approaching the size of Queens, could,
exactly,
could claim to be more than 51%
mm-hmm.
Foreign-born. Where is this going? You know,
well, let me say it's moving, okay, and it's going today. To tell you the truth, people are far more acceptable here in Queens than when I first even came into office as borough president. Far more acceptable, because we have a large Asian community. The largest community that began to grow was right where I lived, and it was our Hispanic community from all the different nations in South America. But today we have a large Russian community, Russian Jewish community. That's growing, and mind you, people live places, and where people live, they get to know their neighbors. They have block associations. We have more block associations and civic associations than any other borough, okay? Because people have private homes here. A lot of them do. Yes, we had overcrowding. We still have overcrowding. And I dealt with that for all the time that I was in the city council. We tried to make sure that people are living, if they're going to live, that they live safely, because if they live in too many people in one apartment, it's dangerous and it causes terrible fires. So we've been through all of that. We developed, I paid for the fire department to have an information truck so that they could go and they would speak different languages when there's a fire and explain to people in their language that they understood how that you mustn't do this. This is a dangerous way to live.
All right. Thank you very much, Queensborough President Helen Marshall, for joining us.
Can I just say one other thing?
Sure.
I believe in the human spirit. And when you see my Queens General Assembly, people of all different nationalities talking, they work it out. And one woman got up and she said, you know, Mrs. Marshall, this is one of the highest experiences I've had in dealing with my fellow men and women. Okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Now we're going to bring in another guest, Valeria Trevis. She is the executive director of NICE, the New Immigrant Community Empowerment, which is based in Jackson Heights. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you.
One of the most interesting statistics about Queens is that the Latino population increased 61%, mm-hmm. 61% between 1990 and 2006. What is behind this very large influx?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Northwest Queens region is the central point of entry for a lot of new immigrants from Latin America. I think, as Seema mentioned before, from China CDC, people go to where their communities are at. So we saw, you know, first the establishment of the Colombian community here, and more recently we've seen a large influence of Ecuadorian and Mexican immigrants, and people keep bringing people from their hometown, sort of a town-to-town migration from, say, southern Mexico or the mountainous regions of Ecuador, straight into Jackson Heights, Elmhurst, Woodside, Corona.
You have spoken on this show before about mm-hmm. how the sort of lack of affordable housing has pushed some Latinos out of Queens. Is that still happening?
There has been some migration into other spaces, but I think what's happening a lot is sort of a doubling up. I know that we've mentioned informal housing and informal conversions, but what's also happening, excuse me, is just regular apartment buildings being severely overcrowded with many families sharing one single living unit.
I'd like to take another call or two. By the way, sure. The number 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC is the phone number. I'm Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. I'm speaking to Valeria Trevis, the executive director of NICE, an immigrant group, and Andrew Beveridge of Queens College in CUNY. And let's take a call from April from Hollis. Hi, April. You're on WNYC.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And interesting, I'm also a Queens College alum. And I grew up here in Hollis, and I've noticed, I mean, I'm getting back to the caller from College Point who was talking about overdevelopment. That's one of the things that I've noticed here in Hollis. I mean, Hollis, Queens seems to have been, in some respects, the part of the borough that time forgot. We had a significant white flight here in the 60s and the 70s, and so it became mostly African-American. I myself am African-American. Then it started to become Caribbean. There were more people were coming in from the Caribbean, then more of a Latino population. But in the last 10 years, what I noticed is that a lot of the older population, a lot of the older homeowners were dying out. People were buying their houses, knocking them down, and turning them into multifamily units. And so now we have that overcrowding that started to happen in other places is starting to happen here. Mm-hmm. And I find it very distressing because it's changing the character of the neighborhood from a nice area that had single-family homes to an area that has a lot of renters, people not taking care of their places, or bringing in a lot of cars. Like, we have one house in the block that was turned into a multifamily house. There are like five cars in that
Valeria Trevis, let me get you to address this, and then we're going to have to take a break. But you know, you were talking about affordable housing, and in many cases, bringing in these multifamily homes is affordable housing, and yet how does that change the character of a neighborhood?
Well, I mean, I think the city needs to keep an ear to the ground and have conversations with families, with advocates, and to realize what the needs are within the community, right? We do need more space. We do need more access. We need more parks. We need more workforce development in this community, more English classes. And, of course, it transforms the neighborhood. And what the city needs to do is be there following up with the resources that are needed.
Well, and when you say listen to the community, I think that certainly one of the challenges of Queens is that there are multiple communities. I mean, there's the community that's lived there a long time. There's the communities that are moving in. There's the communities that will be there 10 years from now.
Well, I think it was interesting. Last week we had a town hall meeting, and public advocate Bill de Blasio came in, and his opening statement centered around, you know, child care and senior care, but most of the people that were at the conference, I mean, at the town hall meeting from all sorts of ethnic backgrounds, stressed things that I just stressed: the need for workforce development, the need to access secure jobs, the need for affordable housing, the need for English classes. So I think, you know, even if we're a diverse community, many of us have the same needs. The other thing I want to point out is that Queens is not only a space for families, it's also a space for many workers and single individuals. And so this is something that I don't see reflected a lot in the statistics that I think perhaps hasn't been caught on, and why it's so important to do that base work is that as the border becomes more militarized, it becomes harder for people to bring their families from Latin America. So oftentimes men or women will come here, work here, and send remittances back home.
Thank you so much, Valeria Trevis, the executive director of the immigrant group NICE. Thanks to Andrew Beveridge. Stick with us. Thanks to everyone who called. And we will be back in just a moment with more of the anecdotal census of the Borough of Queens. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer, speaking all this hour about the anecdotal census of the borough of Queens. How has that borough changed in the last 10 years? One of the things that we've been talking about, it is now 51% foreign-born, one of the only, if not the only, county in the country. Is that right, Andrew Beveridge, that is 51% foreign-born?
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think it probably is one of the very few that's, particularly when you throw in the diversity. And I just want to make two quick points about
Well, hang on, Andrew, hang on, because I do want to welcome in another guest. Chris Coy is the Executive Director of Asian Americans for Equality. Good morning, Chris. Thanks for joining
hi.
Us.
Yes, hi, thanks.
And Andrew, just hold your thought, because I did want to get a chance to read this comment to Chris. We have a comment from Sheila on the comments page, on the Brian Lehrer page at WNYC.org. She writes, I have lived in Little Neck for 47 years. The major change in the past 10 years is that it is now an Asian neighborhood. It used to be almost all white and largely Jewish. Now the people are Chinese and Korean. When I moved here, I thought it was a boring neighborhood with no diversity, but it is quite different now. So this is Little Neck, which is practically in the county of Nassau. It's a leafy neighborhood tucked into the northeast corner of the borough. Is there a misconception that all the immigration in Queens is happening in dense urban areas?
Well, that's actually the point I was going to make, because Little Neck Bayside has gotten incredibly Asian, is incredibly upscale, and is becoming, you know, is becoming like an Asian area. If you go down Bell Boulevard, right before the school starts, you'll see all sorts of banners inviting people for SAT and other types of courses that are run for the Asian community. It's really quite amazing. And then the other neighborhood that people sometimes forget about is Southeast Queens is a very upscale African-American neighborhood that's sort of, you know, around Jamaica, but it includes Cambria Heights, Laurelton, St. Albans, and so there's a tremendous amount of very upscale parts of Queens, and they're not inhabited by white folks.
Chris Coy of Asian Americans for Equality, what are the economic forces that are driving this? I think that many New Yorkers, if asked, would probably think that most immigrants are sort of, you know, what Valeria was just talking about, sort of single parents crossing the border trying to get money back to send back to their families. But this is not the picture in these neighborhoods, is it?
I think that, you know, since the 70s, when, you know, many of the, like, Asian Americans who are maybe foreign students or professional workers from Asia settle in Queens and Flushing area, I mean, it has changed tremendously in the last 20 years. I mean, now it's more of a gateway of immigrants who actually settle in New York City, building its roots in these neighborhoods, and whether they are, like, you know, having the kids go to the school or actually setting up their own businesses. I think that, you know, this is like home, I mean, to these immigrants.
And
Flushing, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a whole kind of a growth of the population, yeah.
Is it a neighborhood of small businesses? Is there, you know, are there particular jobs that are attracting these immigrant communities?
I think that, you know, in terms of Queens and Flushing, I think a lot has to do with, like, in the 80s and 90s, there were, like, you know, a whole opportunity of affordable housing in these neighborhoods where people could both rent and then also they could buy their own homes. And then I think the other aspect of it is that, like Flushing, for example, it's a major transportation hub. And so then you kind of have many of the immigrants who kind of like, or Asian Americans who settle in these neighborhoods because they have easy access to transportation because they either get priced out from like Manhattan, Chinatown, or that there's just not enough of affordable housing left in these neighborhoods when the gentrification happened. And so you see that kind of pattern of growth, I think, and development. And I think overall it's very, very positive, you know, because it's like, you know, as probably many folks remember in the 70s and even early 80s, Flushing and many of these neighborhoods in Queens that we have these new these immigrants that settled here, they were vacant, you know. There was a white flight, or there was a, you know, economic disinvestment. And the Asian American population, immigrant population, not only Asian, I think Hispanic, from Latin America and other places, they really fill that void and then create that kind of economic dynamism that we have today.
Now, in the last election cycle, we saw a lot of civic engagement in the Asian American community. We saw in Manhattan, mm-hmm. an election of an Asian of American yes. council member, some very vigorous races in Queens, mm-hmm. And obviously John Liu elected to controller. And I'm wondering, is there a link between the sort of settling of these middle class, family, stable neighborhoods in Asian communities in Queens and political empowerment?
Definitely. I think that's a direct correlation. I think that, you know, because it's like, especially in the neighborhood of Queens, where like you have a much more high level home ownership, for example, that you do have people after buying a home that they get involved in local communities, they register to vote because they see that this is like their permanent home. For example, they have a great stake in the political leaders, and I think that also, I mean, since the first election of John Liu as the first Asian American elected official. In New York City, or a matter of fact, in New York State, that give folks a lot of confidence, and that they could make a difference. That I think that also, when you look at John Liu, when he ran for office 9 years ago, and then also when he ran for controller, he also really kind of ran on an agenda of inclusion, diversity, and that he won. He won these races. What became city council member, controller, based on, you know, really building a coalition, you know, of Asian Americans, you know, local resident white voters, African American voters, Hispanic voters. It's really one that I think is a very good success and a good reflection for the for not only for the Asian American community, but I think for the overall city.
And sticking with Little Neck, I mean, do you see Little Neck and some of these areas of Eastern Queens staying as Chinese and Asian communities, or do you see that population moving out, say, in the next 2 years and some other population replacing them?
I think that, you know, I see that there's a continued probably, you know, growth in terms of in these neighborhoods. I see that also, like, for example, along Long Island and all that, you have like the Korean Americans also moving more in the east, and then so because there's a great tremendous growth in terms of population and migration to the borough of Queens, and then Queens for many reasons is attracting, you know, that growth, and then that the immigrant, whether it's new immigrants or even natives that are moving into the borough.
Let's bring in very quickly Peter from Flushing. Hi, Peter. You have a comment?
Yes, I have a comment. I just was calling because, you know, one of the benefits of the new immigration is that the shopping centers are all converting from, you know, historically white A&Ps and wall bounces to, like, ethnic Chinese and Korean stores. And the variety of offerings at these new supermarkets is wonderful.
and it makes for a great shopping experience in Flushing and Elmhurst.
All right. Good shopping and good food has been a change in the last 10 years. Thank you, Peter, for your call. Andrew Beveridge, professor of sociology at Queens College and CUNY Graduate Center, some final thoughts? We've got about 30 seconds.
Well, I really think that you have some neighborhoods that are overbuilding, some neighborhoods that are improving massively, and you have some neighborhoods that are potentially slipping, and this is sort of the typical thing, that some neighborhoods grow and some neighborhoods decline, and that's really what you see in Queens.
Chris Cui, any final thoughts?
No, I think that, you know, it's great that I think we have elected official who reflects the community, but then also, I mean, especially in Flushing now, we have local council member, you know, the new and also state assembly woman who's actually from the community of Asian descent, and I think that's we have a new controller who's Asian American, but at the same time, really, you know, having a very inclusive and diverse agenda for the whole New York City.
Thank you very much, Chris Cui, Executive Director of Asian Americans for Equality. Thanks to everybody who called. One thing we didn't get to talk about this hour that we did get some calls on, so maybe we'll do another segment, but of course the conversation will continue online on the Brian Lehrer page at WNYC.org, is about gay empowerment in Queens, the rise of a gay community in Queens, gay elected representatives. So we will get to that on another show. Thank you so much, Andrew Beveridge. Thank you so much, Chris Cui. Thank you so much to all of our guests and all of the callers on the Anecdotal Census. I'm Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer, and that is it for today. Don't forget to tune in tonight for President Obama's address from the Oval Office at 8. This is the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Andrea Bernstein, and I will be back tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.